Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen, and in studio as usual, Paul, our engineer. Paul, how are you today?
I'm looking forward to this one. You're calling out the big guns today here.
I do have the big guns. So today, my guest, via phone line, which is the first time for me, is Sean Carney, from BlackRock. Sean, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So Sean is with BlackRock, and in the industry, as most of my listeners know, this is my 27th year. It's good to have partners who you never have to apologize for. I've got a handful, and BlackRock is certainly one of them. So Sean, I'm very proud and happy to have you on the show.
Well, that's great. Thank you for that compliment.
Of course. So just a bit of background for the audience. Sean is a managing director and head of municipal strategy and primary markets team within the BlackRock's Global Fixed Income Group. He's also a member of the firm's investment strategy team. He has 16 years experience in the industry, joined BlackRock in 2007 as a municipal bond trader, and he has received in 2017 recognition as the industry's top municipal strategist. So congratulations, Sean, and we're happy to have you on the show.
Thank you.
So the focus today is certainly on fixed income, but I thought maybe we'd just kind of start with the basics. So first of all, some of our listeners may not know much about BlackRock. We in the industry do. Do you mind giving some background on that?
Sure. BlackRock is the world's largest asset money manager. Fixed income is something that we specialize in, as well as many other things. We manage about $130 billion in assets on our municipal platform. So we manage across the entire yield curve. So whether it's a client that's looking to do something on the very short end of the curve, say 0 to 30 days, or somebody who's looking for longer-term investments out 30 or 40 years, and we also invest across the entire credit curve. So if it's someone looking for AAA-rated securities, we can do that. Or if it's somebody who's looking to dive into the high-yield sector or non-rated sector, we have a very large credit research team here at BlackRock, 18 individuals dedicated to scouring our holdings and issuance in the primary and secondary, proprietary looking at all issues and all bonds to rate them properly. And in a proactive manner so that we can navigate this very large and somewhat nuanced industry of municipal bonds.
Yeah. And one of the things that I appreciate with my clients is that the connection with one of your direct managers, and that we're able to customize portfolios based on the goals and needs of each of the individual clients.
Yeah, customization is key in a business such as this. And you know, a lot of people think of BlackRock as an asset money manager, and that's true, but we're also a technology firm, and the amount of technology that we have in these walls is absolutely amazing, and it creates an opportunity for us to be able to slice and dice markets and to be able to optimize and customize things in ways that are simply just amazing in today's day and age.
Yeah. So maybe let's start our conversation today. We'll start with basics, and we'll start working our way up. So, and I've shared this with my listeners before from an asset allocation breakdown. If you own equity, just as the name may indicate, you own ownership or you're a piece of whatever company that you're buying into. A fixed income, on the other hand, is actually loaning money to either a municipal entity or government entity or a private entity. Do you want to add anything more to that, Sean?
No, so far, you know, perfectly good explanation. I think one of the questions we often get are tell me the difference between a corporate bond and a municipal bond, you know, type of, that's kind of where the conversation, the hallway that we usually head down.
Sure. So why don't you answer that one?
Sure. I'd love to. So as you rightly point out, while both are a form of debt instruments, There are many differences, but the tax exemption on municipal bonds is the most obvious differentiator, meaning that if you purchase a municipal bond from your home state, the state that you reside in, you won't pay federal, state, or local taxes, where a corporate bond is a taxable security. Thus, when we look at things such as yields or returns, one has to factor in a tax calculation. So let's just play this out real quick. If you were to purchase a 10-year U.S. Treasury, the risk-free rate, quote-unquote, you'd get a yield of 2.63 as I walked off the desk. If you purchase a 10-year AA corporate bond, highly liquid, trading in the market today, that yields 3.33%. If you purchase a 10-year AA muni, again, liquid, trading in the market today, that yields a 2.44%. However, if you find yourself in the 32% tax bracket, the yield on that municipal bond goes from 244 to 380. If you're in the 35% tax bracket, 3.99%. And if you're in the top tax bracket of 37%, that municipal bond now yields 4.12%. So you can see how the after-tax advantage of owning municipal bonds really adds up. I'd say some of the other key differences between munis and corporates, issuers in the use of proceeds, I think structures in the two markets, such as call features and duration, tend to differ. You know, corporates are issued by corporations or companies, exactly how they sound, and it's to raise capital for any number of reasons. It could be as simple as share buybacks, which have obviously been very popular in recent years. Munis, on the other hand, are issued by towns, cities, states to raise money for public projects. You know, there's a very local feel to the municipal bond market. You may drive over a bridge or past a school or a hospital of the bonds that you may own in your portfolio. So again, a much more localized feel. And then a few of the other characteristics that sometimes may be overlooked but are incredibly important. The protections. When you own bonds, you want to know what your protections are. So in the corporate world, you have Chapter 11, a very well-telegraphed, easy mechanism to move through, for instance, to bankruptcy, if that ends up being an avenue that a corporation takes, where states, on the other hand, don't have access to bankruptcy. There's no access to Chapter 11. And while the muni market does, in extreme circumstances, have access to something called Chapter 9, it's much more of a remediation type of stage. You can't just dissolve a city or a state like you can a corporation. If we look at the quality, the credit quality aspects of the market, the muni market is a AA2 rated market, very high quality. Corporate bonds, A3. Again, a good rating, just slightly lower. And then if you go all the way down and look at default rates, right? Over the past 10 years, investment-grade municipal bonds have defaulted at a rate of 0.1%, and investment-grade corporates at 2.3%. So while both, certainly on the spectrum of less risky assets, a rather telling story. The size of the market is also important to understand. So the muni market is 3.8-odd trillion in size. The corporate market is 8 trillion in size. But the stark difference is the number of issuers in the muni market, about 78,000 unique issuers, where in the corporate space, about 2,500. The average trade size in the muni market, and this is important, 250,000, in the corporate market, 3 million. And the reason for that is the muni market is largely held by and owned by retail. About 70% of the muni market is owned by retail, where about 15% of the corporate market is owned by retail. So the psychological aspect of the market and the trading aspects of the market tend to mirror those more of retail as opposed to institutional side trading.
Great. That's a really good comparison. So let's also break down for the audience duration and the importance of duration in today's environment, especially with rising interest rates. And I think part of the theme there is, hey, although I think it's common knowledge now to know that it seems that interest rates will not be risen anymore this year, but you know the risks of buying bonds and then maybe where munis stand with that.
Sure. So duration is an obvious conversation that goes on with inside a fixed income portfolio. It is not our belief that rates rise much in 2019, especially with the Fed being a bit more patient and the data coming in the way it is. It doesn't mean that the Fed is completely off the table for all of 2019. I think the markets have quickly gotten themselves there, pricing in basically a 0% probability that the Fed moves in 19. I don't know that that's necessarily an absolute yet, but that's where markets are. But the backdrop being that We saw a pretty healthy move up in interest rates, higher in yield in 2018. But in 2019, it feels like a more benign environment for interest rates. So duration can work both ways. It can be your friend if you have a curve that's flattening, meaning that the back end of the curve is outpacing the front end of the curve and flattening. Or if you have an environment where yields are rather stable, the long end of the market carries better, meaning the income that you produce on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis from owning longer duration assets is greater than those on the front end of the curve, kind of a risk-reward trade. So, depending on what your view is on interest rates, on the Fed, on influential factors that drive interest rates, both domestically and globally, you make a duration call. Now, right now we have a bit of a neutral duration bias within our municipal portfolios, maybe tilted a little bit towards long, but one of the ways that you can express that is with a barbell. The front end of the curve has become a very attractive asset again. After years of yielding nothing, yields in the front end of the curve are again attractive. So if you marry a front-end trade with an intermediate or longer-end trade, you come out with a neutral duration. But the interesting thing is you pick up a little bit more income with a strategy like that. Right now in the muni market, you pick up about 94% of the curve by going out 20 years. So why not do something like that as opposed to the old strategies of having to go out 30, 35 years on the curve to pick up that additional yield? So the duration conversation is obviously very important. It tends to hinge around your view on interest rates in the near term and also in the longer term.
Do you and I get that, but do you mind kind of breaking it down, maybe coming down one level on the on what that means for our listeners, especially on the duration and the benefit of the barbell?
Sure. And just so that I understand the question right, breaking it down as to what it means for performance or for positioning or just...
Or just or actually what it, from a definition standpoint, I think some of our listeners may not understand the technicalities of that.
Sure. So when investing in any instrument with maturity dates, and that's what municipal bonds are, you can buy bonds as short as 1 year, and you can buy them as long as 100 years. You make a determination on the amount of duration that you want to put into a portfolio. So duration meaning the sensitivity to interest rate moves in either direction. The longer duration, the greater sensitivity to duration moves, to interest rate moves, I should say. So you can invest in the very front end, you can invest in the intermediate part of the curve, or you can invest on the long end part of the curve. More bulleted strategies, or by implementing a barbell type of strategy, you're ultimately going long. You own two different parts of the yield curve, while by default you're short or underweight another portion of the yield curve for one reason or another. One of the reasons that we've been underweight kind of around the 10-year sector is there's a lot of negative term premium that's gotten built into the yield curve, and I know that's somewhat of a wonky term, but as central banks have done what central banks have done through quantitative easing for years, it has kind of disrupted the shape of the yield curve. And we feel as the Fed continues to do what the Fed is doing, and that's raising rates in 2018, now taking a bit of a pause, but getting back closer to their dual mandate, then there's a portion of the curve that could react in a different way than others. And hence the reason that gets us back to our strategy of kind of what we have on now, somewhat of a duration neutral strategy via a barbell.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the interest rates. Most likely, I think most of us believe that it's not going to raise anymore this year. I know last year we had more; it was more of a concern, and I can thankfully say that the portfolios that were managed for me were all positive last year, even in a rising interest rate. So that certainly was nice. But let's talk about munis and how important they are in salt states with a rising interest rate or not. And we should define salt as well, I think.
Sure. It's a great question, and it has been on the top of the questions coming in to me probably since late last year, and they're just increasing as we're getting closer to tax time. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was signed into law in late 17 that took effect in 18, it had some things involved in it away from the headlines that you read about with the corporate tax rate coming down and the individual tax rate coming down, which we can talk to. But the state and local tax deduction, known as the SALT, It allowed taxpayers, particularly of high-tax states, to deduct local tax payments on their federal returns. So in the past, there was no limit. However, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 18 put a cap on this deduction at $10,000. So if you live in a state such as California, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Maryland, Connecticut, these higher tax states, this will have a large impact on this year's tax filing results. So taxpayers that itemized could deduct things such as property income, sales tax, based on the taxing structure of the state where they resided. As we know, those differ across state lines. So while the data is a bit dated, let's use this kind of as an example. In 2014, 34% of California returns included a deduction for state and local taxes, with the average SALT deduction being $17,148. New York was even higher at over $21,000. So that data is somewhat stale. You can imagine those numbers with inflation have moved higher, but you can see how the cap on the SALT is going to be meaningful. It's estimated in a recent Bloomberg article that I read 90% of individuals will opt to take the standard deduction, up from just 75% in 2018.
Wow.
So at the end of the day, the point is that while much was discussed about tax cuts, it was much more focused on the business or corporate side of the equation, where the corporate tax rate moved from 35 to 21. At the same time the SALT was introduced, it was almost a doubling of the standard deduction, which make it for a completely different conversation for many people when it comes to tax time this year. And when you think about the demand in the muni market and where it comes from, this change in the whole tax conversation is going to have people asking, wow, how is it that I avoid this type of a conversation next year? Or is there a way for me to find more income that I can keep, more of kind of keep what you earn? And municipal bonds and the tax exempt income that they produce is ultimately an answer to that inevitable question that's going to be happening if it isn't already happening.
Yeah, that's great. This was more of an issue last year than I think it is now, but I'm going to ask it now because you never know how this year is going to end. So, last year, as I said, our municipal portfolios were positive, not by much, but, they were positive, and it was a bond portfolio, so we're happy. Now, I've had conversations with those that have said, okay, I can get whatever it is in the muni portfolio, total return, not just dividends, right? Because they had the impact of the rising interest rate. Let's call it 1%. And we've got now CDs or money markets, let's say in the 2.5% or 3%, somewhere in there between that. So Michael Hanratty gave me a great answer, but I'm going to let you have your answer as to why it was still a great reason to buy munis last year and then even this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love to hear what Michael's answer was, but I have a feeling you're not going to give me that cover. So,
do you want me to give it to you first?
That's all right. No, let's play this fair.
Okay.
There are more reasons to own municipal bonds than just the things we talked about, right? They represent high quality, low volatility instruments that produce a steady stream of income, right? Tax exempt income. So let's think about it. The market is up 1.2% year to date. Pretty good return.
Mm-hmm.
It's an even split. 60 basis points is coming from price return, 60 basis points is coming from coupon return. And that's important, right? You're not heavily reliant on one side of the equation here, which I like. We talked about the high after-tax yield. Remember, the top marginal tax rate only fell 2.6%. It went from 43.4 to 40.8, right? When you add in the 3.8% to pay for Obamacare. But the key is diversification. Equities have had a fantastic run, no doubt, up about 12% year-to-date, depending on what you index against.
Sure.
Up 16% in the last 9 weeks. But as equity markets get more volatile or retrace, munis act as bonds and offer a portfolio the ballast that they desire in risk-off environments. And I think that's sometimes forgotten. Municipal bonds are negatively correlated to equities and equity-like risk. So yes, the front end of the curve and what we're talking about does offer yield again, and hence the reason for our barbell strategy. We are taking advantage of that. But having the longer tax-exempt income. If the long end of the, let's put it this way, the front end of the curve is more dictated by Fed rhetoric. The long end of the curve is more dictated by inflation and inflation expectations. Mm-hmm. It's not our belief that inflation is going to get overheated anytime soon. So having exposure to the longer end of the curve is somewhat a hedge for that play and for that thesis. And at the same time, you're capturing more income by being out a little longer on the curve. And owning munis just have, you know, obviously several advantages to them, some of which we've already highlighted.
Sure.
But I think the diversification measure is something that we can't underscore enough in a market that has had very low volatility and a market that has gone, an equity market that has gone straight up for the last 9 weeks and has performed very well in recent times.
Scarily well.
Yeah.
So that's a great explanation. I'll tell you what he said, and I think there is a bit of an overlap, and I appreciated it. It was that they were basically planting seeds and farming, and to your point, buying longer duration, getting the higher yields. And while we didn't see a tremendous amount of it last year, he said our investors would see in the upcoming years the results and the product of that from kind of the farming and planting they were doing last year. And that was a direct answer to, hey, maybe the yield is going to be a little bit lower than we would get in something as exciting as CDs or money markets, but we're planting seeds for our long-term investors for much higher, safer yields down the road.
True. And when I think about markets and how they function, the technicals behind a muni market, and quite simply, the supply and demand dynamics in a market are so, so important to understand and to look under the hood of. And munis have been experiencing an environment where demand is significantly outpacing supply. If my calculation is correct for 2019, it will be a net negative issuance year of $50 billion. So said another way, there will be more bonds that mature, are redeemed and called in the muni market than that actually come through the primary or new issuance market. So by definition, that's an incredibly strong technical when you have a shrinking market and rising demand. And as we get closer to tax time and more people have these conversations as a result of the change in the SALT and the standard deduction, all of those things we just discussed, the demand from munis, from retail, is so strong that it doesn't seem like there will be many weeks throughout the year where it can keep pace with or outpace supply.
I'm not a genius economist, but if it comes to supply and demand, there's not enough supply and there's a big demand, that sounds like it would fare pretty well.
It's pretty positive. If when we look at years where there's a net negative environment since 2008, the return profile is almost 2 percentage points higher than those years where it's a net positive year. And in fixed income, when you're talking about a high-quality instrument such as munis, that's pretty meaningful.
Yeah. So in your tenure, I'm going to ask you my final thought question here in a minute because we're running out of time, but I'll throw in one more. Do you have a quick... And I know I'm putting you on the spot, but just a quick story from your time and experience as an advisor as it pertains to fixed income or perhaps anything in the advisory world?
A quick story. And give me an idea. Kind of lead me here. What kind of story are you looking for? An experience?
Maybe an experience, yeah. Yeah,
Just watching how the municipal bond market has transformed from pre-crisis to post-crisis, the amount of transparency in this market and the greater liquidity in this market and the adoption of technology has been incredible. I can remember days of someone asking a question and it literally taking days to dig and try and find the information, and now we're in a situation where this is somewhat mind-blowing. The performance of tobacco bonds in the municipal bond market is highly correlated to the price of gasoline. It sounds funny, I understand. But when people have more cash in their pocket and they're getting gas, there tends to be greater cigarette consumption at convenience stores where the prices tend to be higher and so on. So we can come in and now on our screens in a moment's notice look at what the average price of gasoline, unleaded gasoline, is across the states and understand if it's going up or down and how that's going to affect, for instance, our tobacco holdings.
Wow.
Or if there's a hurricane that's projected to hit somewhere. In a moment's notice, we can download all of our holdings and see how prone we are to that area. So this adoption of technology and not having to wait for data and the distribution of data today, you know, so maybe not specifically a one individual story, but maybe the, you know, the evolution of kind of where the municipal bond market has gone from pre-crisis to during the crisis to post-crisis and where we are today, I think is just, you know, an incredible story and evolution to have witnessed. And I appreciate it having seen it. I don't know if maybe some of the younger people in the business do. I think they take a lot for granted when it comes to access to data and speed of information and so on. But, you know, I love where the muni market is and where it's headed in the future because of these attributes.
Well, yeah, thanks for that. And I love it that you guys are taking care of the munis for us. So, Sean, we're nearing the end, so, and it's been a pleasure having you with us in the studio, albeit via phone line. But I do have the honor of asking my final thought question, and that is, and it's a little different than the story, but this may be your ultimate lesson learned over your tenure as a fixed income specialist.
Yeah, it's been a privilege to be here, so thank you. I think that, you know, coming from the seat that I sit in and specializing in municipal bonds, this, you know, being able to answer so many questions and concerns with kind of keep more of what you earn, right? I often like to say that, you know, there's so many reasons to like muni bonds, whether they be short-term in nature because of the positive return or longer-term. It's often the tax exemption that brings people to the conversation into munis, but it's all the other benefits that ultimately keep muni investors in the asset class for the long haul. So when you meet these people, it's not like they're in munis and then they flip out of them in a month. Muni investors are muni investors for a long period of time, and they tend to be very inquisitive and curious people when it comes to information. And, you know, I think that any of the number of reasons that we've discussed over the past half hour are all attributes to that. But I think that's kind of one of the things that I take away from, you know, from my tenure here and the seat that I've sat in and the questions that I get most often, whether they be internally or externally, when out meeting clients and advisors.
That's great. Well, Sean, thank you for joining us today. Thanks for everyone who has listened. If you'd like to learn more about Sean or BlackRock, Sean, you want to give how they can learn more about you?
Yeah, the BlackRock homepage will have access to our fixed income, and from fixed income you can click on our tax-exempt offerings, whether they be our mutual funds or separately managed accounts, so on, and all of our commentary is there. We write a monthly, we write an outlook piece, and we try and keep people as informed as we can and as transparent as we can, and I'm sure that there's an email and a phone number attached there somewhere. If anybody ever wanted to reach out, I'd be more than happy.
Great. And it is very good information. And I want to remind everyone to listen to this podcast. You just simply go to bartzandbergen.com/latest-episode. That's a new link. And then the other previous episodes will be listed there as well. Thanks, everyone, so much for tuning in. We look forward to being back in the studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.